Every episode of this podcast is about true things that have happened at some point or another on this planet. Each episode is different than the next, and they are each centered around stories that are odd, outlandish, or of the occult. This podcast will include foul language. This podcast may also include themes of graphic content such as murder, rape, or gore. Listener's discretion is advised.
Welcome back to Seven Circles. We are Autumn and...
Circles! What the fuck was that?
Yeah, we took a week off, and now we're back, so here we are.
And now we are called Seven Circles!
I did not say it like that.
You kind of did, though.
Okay, here we go!
Oh, the fun we have!
Today, we have a fantastic true story for you all. I am super excited about this one, so listen up. This story could be categorized as just plain weird history, but it could be a supernatural story as well. Let's see what you think at the end.
Place your bets now.
Leonard Pardee was married to Sarah W. Burns on the 30th of June in 1830. They lived together in New Haven, Connecticut. Together they had seven children, and they were called Isabel, Antoinette, Estelle, Mary, Leonard, and two Sarahs. That's right, they named two of their daughters Sarah because they love that name so fucking much.
Was it Sarah or was it Sarah?
It was Sarah Jr. and Sarah.
Tonin?
Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Maybe if she'd had a bit more serotonin, we wouldn't have had this story to tell.
To provide for the family, Leonard managed the local bathhouse and eventually became a well-known carpenter. Leonard and his wife Sarah were both progressive and free-thinking individuals and thusly passed on those traits to their children. So, Leonard was very successful with his carpentry business, and by the time the Civil War began, Leonard had made a small fortune for his family. His daughter Sarah, the one this story is about, took an interest in his woodworking skills, and he began to teach her all there is to know about furniture making and all that jazz. Look, I could research the technical terms for all the fancy designs that get carved into banisters and shit, but we are going to put a pin in that and save that for later. Trust me, later you're going to learn a few things about interior design.
Did they invent shiplap?
What's shiplap?
Yeah, you know, that garbage wood paneling shit that people put on walls in all these trendy interior design shows these days.
I don't know.
You need to watch more HGTV, dude. You're missing out.
I only watch that like if I'm in the waiting room at a doctor's office or something.
I know, it almost makes going to the doctor worth it.
Little Sarah Pardee was the most brilliant of the lot. By the time she was 13, she knew five different languages and was proficient in music, math, and science. She was incredibly articulate as well as kind to her peers, and, being beautiful as well, earned herself the nickname the Belle of New Haven.
She really was quite lovely.
I mean, yeah, I've seen some pictures of her, and for that era, she looks kind of hot.
Oh yeah, I'd hit it.
Yeah, and she was only like 4'8", little tiny petite lady too.
Oh, she was?
Yes.
Oh, no way. Yeah. Little midget Sarah.
Nope.
Little small person Sarah.
Dwarf, but she wasn't a dwarf.
Dum-ba-dee-dum. Would you like to shoot my gun?
One of Sarah's best friends when she was growing up was called William Winchester. Every Sunday after church, they would play together in the fields.
Uh-huh. I'll bet they did, if there's grass on the field.
And when they got older, they would sneak kisses behind the church garden shed.
No comment.
When they both became adults, William began studying at Yale College. Sarah also enrolled, but this was the mid-1800s, and most colleges were for white men only. But Yale was a progressive school that, at the time, had a separate college called the Young Ladies Collegiate Institute.
YLCI.
YLCII.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, and now we are going to get into some Freemasonic shit. Are you ready?
Wait, no. Oh, yeah, okay, I'm ready, yeah.
If you don't know what the Freemasons are, let me give you a quick rundown. Freemasonry refers to fraternal organizations that trace their origins to the local guilds of stonemasons that, from the end of the 13th century, regulated the qualifications of stonemasons and their interaction with authorities and clients. They are a very old organization that still exists to this day, and there are loads of conspiracy theories about them, but we will not get into that at this time or in this episode.
Yeah, let's just say they're not regulating stonemasonry anymore. Probably more like the trafficking of little girls and shit.
Maybe. But like I said, we'll get into that at a later juncture.
If they haven't murdered us for saying that by the time we get to it.
We're not that famous yet. They don't care.
I mean, they're everywhere.
So Yale College, now known as Yale University, produced many, many men who ended up becoming members of the Freemason Order. This includes William Winchester, William's father Oliver, and Sarah's father Leonard. And Sarah wanted so much to be part of that world, but she was a woman, so she was not allowed.
Denied!
And we will get back to that later. For now, let us move on to Sarah and William's marriage. Of course they got married. They had known each other since they were children.
Is that the rule?
No, but I kind of think it was back in the day, though.
It was? Like if you fooled around in the cornfields and you had to marry him?
Well, so if the woman lost her peaches and cream to a man, then yeah, she would have to marry the man, but the man could fuck whoever they wanted to.
So if a man busted his peaches and cream all over the girl, then he had to marry her.
What peaches and cream? What the fuck?
Unless it was one of the staff, I guess.
Yes. Exactly. Okay.
You could defile and impregnate those all you like, but you wouldn't have to marry them, right?
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
But that'd be more like, I don't know, putting whipped cream on your hot fudge brownie.
Yeah. Anyway, William's sister Annie was good friends with Sarah. They both had loads of family members belonging to the Freemasons. They were in the same social class, and they even studied the same subjects at college.
Yeah, like embroidery and cooking, interspersed with playtime with kittens. You know, lady things.
No, more like architecture and mathematics and things like that.
Ladies could study those things back then?
Yeah, Yale was progressive like that.
Oh, that's good. Did they still get playtime with kittens, though?
I don't know. We'll have to time travel back there and see for ourselves.
I mean, I would like playtime with kittens.
Okay.
And I'm not a lady.
Are you sure about that?
I mean, do you want to check again?
I mean, a couple episodes ago, you sure were wanting the penis.
Don't make me give you my peaches and cream, man.
God. The one thing that set them apart, though, was money. Sarah's family was well off, upper middle class. William Winchester was absolutely drowning in wealth. William's father, Oliver Winchester, was the creator of the Winchester repeating rifle. Oliver started out as a clothing manufacturer, but quickly discovered that there was more money to be had in firearms. And this is how he became disgustingly wealthy. We are talking like Elon Musk of the mid-1800s here.
Financially speaking, of course. I mean, all he really did was design a gun that you didn't need to reload as often between murdering Native Americans who were trying to defend their land and the buffalo that you wanted to eat between slayings. Say what you will of Elon Musk, but I'm not sure the two are comparable besides their extreme wealth.
Yeah, that's basically the only comparison, really. You are correct.
Yeah, I mean, Elon isn't trying to kill the natives, he's trying to bring man to Mars.
You don't know what Elon's endgame is, Daniel.
Do you think he's a Freemason?
Ooh, probably. Back to the story. Even though William was far more wealthy than Sarah, he didn't care. He knew that she had a pure heart, and she was so smart that she could make it on her own, and she didn't need his fortune. So they were married when they both turned 23. In June of 1866, they gave birth to a daughter called Annie Pardee Winchester. Not long after she was born, though, doctors figured out that Annie had a disease called marasmus. I was curious about this disease, so I looked it up. So back in 1866, they all thought marasmus was the reason that children couldn't properly digest food and nutrients.
Titty milk!
But from what I have learned, children who are malnourished suffer from marasmus. So rather than marasmus being the cause of malnutrition, it is actually the result. Annie probably suffered from something else, like a serious iron deficiency that caused her to not be able to process nutrients. But what do I know? I'm not a doctor.
Apart from that one time, remember? With the white coat and the catheter? That was a good time.
We don't talk about that.
Why not?
Because it's just not for everyone else to know about.
Well, they do now.
So Annie had this from birth, and Sarah struggled with trying to keep her alive. For 6 weeks, Annie just cried and cried, until she died. William and Sarah were devastated. It was an incredible hardship for them both. They had all the money in the world, and none of it helped to save their daughter. So they decided to not bother having any more children. It was that traumatic.
Sad.
Not much is known about Sarah and William's lives between the death of Annie up until the year 1880. So that is 14 years of what I am assuming blissful, normal marriage life. And I really love this for Sarah because the rest of this story is going to get pretty dark pretty quick, so listen up.
Yeah, from what I've read, they had a happy 14 years, minus the mourning of Annie, of course.
Sweet. What do you think they were doing those 14 years? Anal?
Yeah! You guessed it!
Uh-huh. Oh, gee. Golly gee, Sarah, let me put it in your bum!
Maybe she was asking for it. Hey, William, give me them peaches and cream up my butthole!
Oh my god. Oh, maybe she likes it. Maybe, yeah. Who cares? I don't care. That was her kink. Whatever.
It's a good kink to have.
Are you guys ready for the darkness that is Sarah Winchester's life? I am. In 1880, Sarah's mother passed away. A few months later, William's father Oliver Winchester also died. The Winchester fortune and company went to William. And then a few months after gaining the company, William died of tuberculosis in March of 1881. He was only 43 years old.
I mean, that was actually about the average life expectancy back then, although I guess the added wealth and access to whatever healthcare couldn't save their daughter may have meant he'd have had a little more in him, were it not for the tuberculosis.
Yeah, because Sarah's mum was quite old when she died, and Oliver Winchester was also quite old when he died, so...
How old were they?
Like in their 60s or 70s.
Is this factual, or are you just throwing out arbitrary numbers?
Arbitrary numbers!
I'm just impressed you said arbitrary.
Fuck off.
Are you sure these numbers weren't superfluous?
Superfluous.
Oh my god, this is my life.
Now, since Sarah and William had no male children, and William was Oliver's only male son, the Winchester fortune and half of the company were now Sarah's. It was all worth about $20 million. How much is that in today's money? Well, take a guess.
Ah, shit, I don't know. Probably over $1 billion?
Wrong! $550 million.
Okay, that's still a little more than pocket change.
It's definitely more than I will ever earn in my lifetime.
Try harder.
Do better.
Write a podcast.
This made Sarah Winchester one of the wealthiest women in the world at that time. Oh, and the company generated about $1,500 a day just for Sarah's share of the Winchester business. That's like $27,000 a day in today's money.
She must have been literally swimming in blowing hookers.
Or snuffing harlots.
What?
I don't know. 1850s lingo.
Maybe she was swimming in peaches and cream.
Fuck off. I just spit everywhere.
For God's sakes, man.
Did I get on your monitor?
You just got your peaches and cream all over my monitor.
Okay, so now Sarah has lost everyone that she loves dearly. Well, mostly.
Hookers.
She still had some siblings and her dad hanging about. But she also has gained more money than she could ever spend in her lifetime. So what is the first thing that she does?
We literally just covered this, right?
No, Daniel. She did exactly what I would do in her situation. She fucks off for 3 years on a trip around the world. Very little is known about Sarah's 3-year excursion. She did not keep a diary, and this was the 1880s, so Sarah couldn't post about it on Instagram. but here is what we think she might have gotten into based on her interests and hobbies and such.
I'm all out of ideas, honestly. Did you have any actual facts here, or are we just going to guess random rich folk stuff? Did she go on safari and shoot an elephant? Did she go to China and smoke a crap ton of opium? Did she sail the Nile? Did she dine with the Queen?
No. These are speculative facts from the people who run the Winchester estate. So during the 1880s, there was a branch of special Freemasonry developing in France. It was called co-Freemasonry, and we think that Sarah might have spent some time in France because of this. Remember, loads of men in her family and social circle were part of the group, and she wanted desperately to be part of it as well. But as a woman, she could not. So with co-Freemasonry, women were also allowed to partake in whatever it is that they do. Co-Freemasonry was actually shunned by most of the male lodges around the world because of the fact that they were sharing their secrets with women.
Who might share the strongest evidence of rottenness?
What?
Yeah, so I was looking up stuff about the Freemasons, and there was a dude who had like written some manifesto or some document that, in his words, shared the strongest evidence of rottenness within the Freemasons. So I made a reference that no one would get.
Neato!
You're welcome.
Thanks.
And since it has a 6-syllable word in it, I'll read this part for Autumn. We also strongly suspect that she visited many architectural sites and wonders all over the world to study them.
Why do we think this? Well, you'll find out soon.
Was it so she could build her batshit crazy house?
Shh.
Oh yeah, sorry. I guess we're getting to that bit.
We're getting to there. Okay, so after 3 years of travel, she went back home to New Haven. And this is where the story becomes fractured. Some say that while in New Haven, Sarah visited a medium called Adam Coons. Sarah was having a hard time processing all of the traumatic deaths in her life, and she was feeling a little bit cursed.
A little bit cursed?
A little bit cursed, yes.
Like, oh, I've got a little bit of a headache. Oh, I'm also feeling a little bit cursed.
Just a wee little curse.
Just a wee little curse. Okay, fair enough.
They say that she felt as if she had evil spirits following her around since the death of her husband, William. Now, the medium allegedly got in touch with one of those spirits who told him this.
The Winchester name is cursed, and the spirits of everyone who has been killed by a Winchester firearm are now following Sarah, and will continue to do so for the rest of her life. But if Sarah moves to California and builds a special house, she can confuse the spirits and they will leave her alone.
Sounds legit.
Not really Sarah's fault, though, was it? Dumbass spirits haunting the wrong person.
She's the last person in the lineage and she got all the money.
She didn't make the special gun, though.
But she's profiting off of it.
I guess.
So, there is no proof that this happened, and I spent some time trying to find out more about Adam Coons. Unfortunately, I could not find anything more about him, only that Sarah supposedly had contact with him. And this would have been mentioned somewhere, to be sure. Sarah was a very rich woman, and she was famously well known.
Some might even say well-knownly famous.
Indeed. So, people who had contact with mediums during this time, famous people such as Harry Houdini, were documented in some form or another.
I'm surprised the illegitimacy of such people escaped him.
So Sarah did move to California. The logical reason she did this was to be close to her Pardee family, who had moved out there during the gold rush. She purchased an 8-room farmhouse in San Jose that sit on 160 acres of land. Soon, after moving into her new home, Sarah hired a group of construction workers to start building.
Weird. I thought she was rich enough that she didn't need to buy a fixer-upper.
I mean, yeah, she could have started from the ground up, huh?
Or just bought, like, turnkey, ready to move in, you know, couple bedrooms, nice ensuite.
That's not what she wanted, Daniel. The work on her house was done non-stop. She had a day crew and a night crew building constantly. She never drew up any official blueprints. Sarah would have an idea for a new room and present a rough sketch of it to her builders, and then they would make it happen. When the mansion was at its largest, it had between 500 and 600 rooms and stood 7 stories tall.
At its largest? Did it shrink?
Yes.
How?
It took a shrinking potion.
Honey, I shrunk the mansion?
Yes.
The locals of San Jose were perplexed over this whole ordeal. The local population of San Jose at this time in 1884 was around 4,000 people. So the rumors flew around the town like swarms of locusts. One of the rumors was that Sarah would go to her seance room every night to talk to spirits that followed her. Another was that Sarah constantly wore veils to cover her face so that the spirits would not recognize her. Another rumor yet was that Sarah was not building the house to confuse the spirits, but instead it was a cage to trap them in.
Did she have a proton pack and a containment unit in the basement?
I was hoping you would throw in a Ghostbusters joke, but yes, maybe she did.
Oh, don't expect it to be the last.
Oh, goody.
I bet Peter Venkman would have had a piece of Sarah. Aw, yeah. It is not Sarah. It is only Zool.
It's only Zool.
Apart from the builders and her staff of servants, Sarah hardly ever invited guests into her home. At this time in history, if you were very wealthy and famous, it was considered polite to host parties and dinners for other elite and powerful people. So this was another odd thing to the people of San Jose. Why is this rich woman wasting all of her money on this incredible house and yet never having guests over?
Maybe she feared for their safety with all these pissed off spirits roaming around. Or maybe these people didn't like board games and that's all she wanted to do.
Maybe it was both.
Yes.
Okay, let's talk about the house now.
Fucking finally.
This is why we're here.
This is a house that architecture nerds all over the world come to visit.
Which is ironic, given it adheres to literally no architectural rules whatsoever.
And that's one of the reasons they love it. There are doors that open up to walls, doors that open up, and if you step out of them, you will fall 15 feet to the ground onto the lawn.
13 feet, remember? She was all about that number.
Oh yeah, we'll get to that. There is a door that opens up above the kitchen, and if you step through it, you will fall 2 stories down onto the kitchen floor. If spirits couldn't walk through walls, then this house most certainly would confuse them. So Sarah spent 36 years building rooms and tearing down rooms and building more rooms. So if you don't believe that spirits were tormenting her, then these doors might just be simple building mistakes. She was, after all, never using any blueprints.
And it shows. It looks like a 5-year-old on acid drew it on a napkin.
So in 1906, the house was 7 stories high, but there was a giant-ass earthquake that year, and it did a whole fuck ton of damage to the upper levels of the mansion. At this point, Sarah did not give up building. Instead of building up, she decided to build out.
Like your mama!
Oh!
Zing.
Since there are no blueprints of this house, nobody knows exactly how big it got. The estimated total is about 24,000 square feet of space.
And probably about the same in wall footprint. That shit's crammed.
Yeah, it's tight.
Unlike your mama.
You know my mom listens to this, right?
Well, it won't be news to her, will it?
Love you, mother.
Love you, mommy. Other mommy.
Okay, I'm going to go into some architecture jargon here now, and I will do my best to explain the terms so that you can better visualize what this house looks like. Or you can pause this podcast real quick and Google Winchester House to see it for yourself.
Yeah, go take the virtual tour on their website. It's pretty cool. Imagine the Google Maps car drove around the whole house, and you can just walk around it like it's street view. And since there are only spirits, it couldn't accidentally run anyone over either.
Yeah, the tour is only $8.99, and once you pay for it once, you get access to it forever, so.
Fun side note, though. The Google Maps car did actually run a bunch of people over. It was an autonomous vehicle, and it actually ran somebody over in Southend, where I lived in the UK.
Oh.
And several other people around the world, I believe.
We should do an episode about the Google Maps car.
I mean, there's only so much to say.
It's a fucking murder car, Daniel.
It's a murder car, yeah. But I mean, unless they actually release the footage of the guy flying over the fucking hood, it's not going to be that interesting, is it?
I don't know. Anyways, moving on. So the exterior of the house is American Queen Anne.
Wait, what? Is this like the American Stonehenge? God, you people, man. Carry on.
This means that there are a lot of beautiful turrets, columns, Dutch gables, and different types of materials used for exterior walls, such as patterned wood shingles that resemble fish scales, terracotta tiles, and other materials all on one single structure. They usually feature a wraparound porch decorated with beautiful and intricate spindle work. I'm not an architecture geek, but this is my favorite style of building, to be sure.
Isn't this usually referred to as Victorian?
I mean, yes and no.
I mean, yes, I googled both and exactly the same images came up.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the interior is what's called aesthetic movement. And I have also learned very quickly during this research that it's my favorite interior design. So aesthetic movement is basically the idea that instead of a home or structure being built purely for the need and function, it can also be beautiful, and this beauty is in every detail in the structure.
Form and function.
Indeed, sir. The Winchester House is a prime example of this style. There are doorknobs with beautiful designs on them. The hinges of the doors were intricately worked with designs. Anywhere you look in the house, there is some small detail that will catch your eye. Look at whatever door is in the room you are sitting in right now. Or if you're in your car, just imagine a door in your house. You see the plain metal doorknob that serves its purpose, but it's incredibly boring to look at? Ever look at your door hinges? Go on, have a glance. That's all I deserve, a glance. They are functional, but boring.
Yeah, she sure did have some sexy door hinges, it's no lie. And her knockers weren't too shabby either. Ah, yeah.
There is design in everything at the Winchester House. The radiators have metalwork flowers on them. There are natural images everywhere, such as leaves, flowers, and birds.
Daisies being her favorite.
True story. Daisies are freaking everywhere in this house. There are wooden window frames carved to look like spider webs, and her 3-year trip around the world inspired all of this design. She took ideas from many cultures such as Persian, Egyptian, Greek, and Japanese. There are wooden archways carved in the style of Japanese garden tea houses. There is bamboo and Asian hand-painted wallpaper everywhere. There are mantelpieces that are Japaned, which means that they are painted black with golden designs all over. There is one with decorative tiles that have cherry blossoms on them with koi carp swimming at the bottom of each side of the mantle.
Again, go check out the virtual tour. We are not in cahoots with the Winchester Estate. We get nothing for it. It's just fucking rad.
I won't even go into detail about the stained glass because Sarah had a lot of it in her home. But I will talk about the Lincrusta. I absolutely adore Lincrusta. What is this word you are asking me? Do you want to know? Lincrusta is a deeply embossed wall or ceiling covering. It was commonly used in the super rich and fancy structures of the late 1800s going into the early 1900s. This stuff was installed in the Titanic and it's featured in many rooms of the White House and other such notable structures. It's just really fancy material, and each design is unique, and it is so incredibly beautiful. And it's all over the Winchester House. Sarah had such good taste.
Filigree.
What's filigree?
I thought you'd never ask. Filigree, it's just like that floral, leafy, pattern crap. Kind of like paisley, in a way. But yeah, just stuff. Although filigree, I think, refers specifically to jewellery, but the same patterns were used in other things like wallpaper and wall coverings and shiz.
I once knew this hippie that loved paisley so much that she called her daughter Paisley.
Poor girl.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Okay. So I won't bore you anymore with interior design stuff. Let's get into the weird shit, shall we? In the grand ballroom, there was a beautiful wooden door. Behind that door is a metal door. Behind that is a smaller metal door. Behind that smaller door is a very old safe. The interior of the safe now stands empty, but legend says that the only contents of that safe that ever existed were her husband's and daughter's obituaries and a photo of her daughter with the lock of the baby's hair. No money, no jewels. The things that mattered most to Sarah were simply her family.
And stained glass windows. So many stained glass windows.
Many, many windows.
All the windows.
So the seance room is the plainest of all the rooms, interestingly enough. No fancy hardware, no elaborate wallpaper. Just a small room with two windows, one of the windows boarded up with bars on it. There is a built-in cabinet in the wall, though, that serves as a secret exit into the closet of the next room. The house has 2,000 doors, 10,000 windows, 47 fireplaces, and 40 staircases. 10,000 windows!
You love big numbers, don't you?
I do!
Whenever you read one of these, it's just so overly exaggerated. I love it. You sound like fucking Dr. Evil.
Mm-hmm. There is a famous staircase that goes up, turns, and ends at the ceiling. As Sarah got older, she developed rheumatoid arthritis. The design of the house begins to reflect that. She started building to adapt to her ailment. The staircases became more twisted and turny, but this was so that she could build the stairs so that she did not have to lift her feet very high. They are dubbed easy risers by the Winchester House historical people.
Yeah, I mean the risers on these stairs were like a couple of inches. They may as well have just been slopes.
Yeah, she could have just built ramps, honestly.
Ramps are slopes.
Oh.
And slopes. Huh. Maybe ramps.
Your mom's a ramp.
No, she's a tramp.
Oh no!
Sorry, mommy.
She ended up building three elevators because close to the end of her life, she was in a wheelchair.
Yeah, that's weird. I don't remember seeing those in the walkthrough, do you?
No. The elevators were not in the walkthrough tour thingy. That's weird.
I mean, I guess they were. We just didn't see them. Or they've since been removed.
I don't think it's... The house also features one of the first ever intercom systems. So I watched a documentary from 1963 presented by Mrs. Lillian Gish. Lillian suggested that Sarah had hired an actual architect in the beginning, but fired him shortly after construction started. I found this old-ass documentary on YouTube. It's kind of creepy. It's in black and white with some seriously eerie music. So I consumed loads of media about Sarah Winchester in the past few months. It started with a few podcasts, and then I started watching documentaries, and eventually watched the film starring Helen Mirren called Winchester. The film was not good. Don't bother with it.
Yeah, it was pretty terrible, unfortunately. However, Sarah Winchester, in her later years, did massively resemble Helen Mirren, so it was well cast. I did also wonder if the Winchester stakeholders really hired a shrink to diagnose Sarah's mental state, and that never happened. So the fact the dude in the movie was getting high on some serious opiates and Sarah was pissed about it was all fictitious, making me wonder if perhaps she was chasing the dragon, hence her batshit crazy house. Who knows?
I hope she was chasing the dragon. I wanna chase the dragon.
They didn't even film much of the movie in the real house because it's in no way conducive to being a film set. Although there are some small parts filmed there.
Yeah, the hallways in the house are way too small. Like, it's just such a small, cramped space, but it's so huge. It's crazy.
Yep, a lot of walls, a lot of doors, a lot of interior windows. Mm-hmm. Like, you can see where there were external windows at one point, and then she built onto the house, but wasn't like, oh, replace those windows with walls. No, it's just windows after windows. It's very odd.
Yeah, and the South Conservatory has a window in the floor.
It does. Or the room beneath it has a window in the ceiling. Really depends how you want to look at it.
But it's not like a skylight. It's like a window that you could like open to look out if it was on the side of a house. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's a floor dark. So what I recommend to all of you out there is that you get as drunk as Autumn when you listen to this, because then my lame-ass jokes will be as funny to you as they are to her.
Yes, we drink while we record, but we don't make it a gimmick like other people do, like Wine and Crime. Hi, Wine and Crime people, we love you.
We don't need to make it a gimmick. They can tell from your slurring speech.
I talk very eloquently.
Yeah, like an hour and a half ago.
I still speak very eloquently. Here are some more interesting things about the house. Sarah incorporated the number 13 in a lot of the designs. There are staircases that had 13 steps. There are many ceilings and windows that feature 13 panels.
How the fuck do you have a ceiling with 13 panels? Like,
triangle room.
That still, would that work? Huh? 1 + 3 + 5 + 7.
Once again, you have to edit this, I don't.
1 + 3 = 4 + 5 = 9 + 7. No, you can't do it with 13 either. Nope.
She eventually had a 13-foot-high, intricately carved metal fence placed around the property to keep nosy neighbors out. People were curious. They would wander onto the grounds, often to get a glimpse at the eccentric widow and her spirit mansion. She then fortified it with an interior cypress hedge so that people could not see into the property at all.
That's right. Hedges fortify iron.
Visually, they do.
Oh, okay. Carry on.
In 1904, her niece moved in to help Sarah out with the managing of the property. By this point, Sarah had withdrawn so much into the house that she no longer wanted to deal with the builders or servants, so her niece became her voice.
Build me a half pipe for my wheelchair, Marion. I do so want to bust out some sick 360s.
Rumor has it that Sarah would sleep in a different bedroom every night. Was that to keep the spirits on their toes? Or did she just have back problems? Sometimes sleeping on a new surface can help your back. I don't know. I feel like I've been writing this for hours and I'm going in circles. Am I building a story to keep the spirits away? Am I confusing them with every word that I type? Am I doomed to keep typing and typing because if I stop doing so, the spirits will have my life?
I sincerely fucking hope not, Autumn. Maybe she should have just built a bunch of teepees in the backyard. They probably just wanted somewhere to rest.
I don't understand. Is this a joke?
It's not a joke. No, like, a lot of the people murdered were Native Americans, right?
Oh.
By the white man.
Yeah.
Yeah, taking their land.
Oh my god, she should have built teepees.
And their teepees.
Fuck.
Yeah.
But Native Americans didn't just dwell in teepees, so that's kind of racist of you.
I mean, I guess they had wigwams as well, but what the fuck are you trying to say?
And they also had, like, clay houses, and they lived in regular-ass houses when the colonizers came.
I really don't believe that that's true.
Mm-hmm.
No, they did not have Western structures and architecture, Autumn. Wigwams!
So this house is allegedly one of the most haunted houses in North America. Many teams of paranormal investigators have been to this mansion, and they all allege to see or feel spirits that supposedly haunt this place. Sarah eventually died from heart failure in one of her bedrooms of the home. She left her fortune and most of her possessions to her niece and her secretary, but the house was left to the state and was sold at auction to an unnamed local investor. Today, the house is owned by Winchester Investments, LLC, and is used as a lucrative tourist attraction. I tried to see if anyone else died in the house besides Sarah, and came up with nothing.
Going by the number of bird cages she had, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that a fair number of canaries probably kicked it.
Oh, I mean, she did have a lot of bird cages, but I just want to think that they were just there for decoration.
Or maybe they could, like, detect the spirits. Like gas in a mine.
Oh, yeah, dude.
Like spirit gas.
Dude, spirit birds, gas bird, spirit birds.
Thanks for that insightful addition there.
So, clearly Sarah was mentally unwell. Was she really cursed or haunted by the spirits of those who had died in the sights of the Winchester repeating rifle? Or did she have some kind of schizophrenia? My theory is this. She really did visit the medium guy. And the medium had some kind of grudge against her. Maybe he lost a loved one to a Winchester rifle himself? But he could clearly see that she was unwell, so he planted this idea of the spirits haunting her to fuck with her. And it worked. And she did what he told her to do. She spent the rest of her life just building and building and building until the day she died.
Maybe. Or maybe he was just a funny fucker who played the ultimate prank for fun. I certainly believe she visited a medium. She was known to be very spiritual. That said, reading some stuff by a chap named Ralph Rambo...
Ralph Rambo?
Oh, yeah.
That's a fucking great name.
Who actually knew Sarah, she was a staunch Baconian. No, she was not just a lover of bacon, or a baconnoisseur. A Baconian subscribes to Sir Francis Bacon's philosophy of methodical observation of fact as a means of studying and interpreting natural phenomena. Bacon was a fervent atheist, and studying fact is hardly prevalent among the religious, let's be honest. So you'd think Sarah would have shunned this spiritual nonsense. But I suppose instead she tried to rationalise it and understand it, which is enough to drive anyone mad. Bacon was also allegedly in bed with the Freemasons, so... Yep. Stuff and things. Mm-hmm. But Sarah was also a known theosophist. Theosophy is a religion that comes in several flavours, from the more occult version brought over to the US by some Russian chick called Helena Blavatsky, to twists on Christianity and Judaism, and as I understand it, she was into the latter. In any case, Sarah had all the money in the world, so she could have just called the fucking Ghostbusters and been done with it.
But the Ghostbusters were not invented in 1850.
Don't get sued. You can't do it. Stop.
Stories about houses always fascinate me. House of Leaves by Mark Z. Danielewski is one of my favorite books. This story about Sarah reminds me of that book so much. Also, Black House by Stephen King is another really good one. Houses are the place where we go for comfort and rest. It's the place that is most familiar to us, and it holds all of our worldly possessions.
And wine.
Our home should be the place that we go to at the end of the day and just chill. Houses should never be sinister or anything that makes us feel uncomfortable or unwanted. So the stories about these haunted and cursed places can make us feel uneasy and sometimes even deranged. A house that is not a home is not really a house at all. It's a prison.
For your mind.
Thank you for listening. If you like what you hear, come support us on Patreon at Seven Circles Pod.
Your donations and support can help us elevate the quality of our podcast, and it would mean so much to us.
And this episode of Seven Circles was written by me, Autumn Vale, and Dan Griffiths as well.
Seven Circles is produced by Autumn Vale with sound editing by Dan Griffiths. Original music by Null Machine and art by Caroline Gates.
You can find us on social media at Facebook, Seven Circles Podcast, Instagram at @7_circles_pod, and Twitter at @7circlespod. Moving to the country, gonna eat me a lot of peaches.
And cream.
Moving to the country, gonna eat me a lot of peaches.
And cream.
Peaches come from a can, they were put there by a man.
With his cream dispenser.
In a factory downtown. If I had my little way, I'd eat peaches every day.
And cream.
Thank you for listening.
Would you like some cream?
And some peaches.
Build me a half-pipe from a wheelchair, Marion. I'll see you at the bus house. 6316.